I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. In his second State of the State address yesterday, Governor Hogan struck a tone of bipartisanship. But Democratic leaders say the governor's rhetoric doesn't match his budget. WIPR reporter Rachel Bay joins us to recap what we've seen so far in the 2016 Assembly. Plus, are one man's burdensome regulations a woman's inalienable protections? We look at bills from the proposed Women's Economic Security Agenda, including equal pay, paid sick leave, and fair scheduling, all on this year's legislative agenda. We'll get a preview of that debate from Charlie Carter of the nonprofit Maryland Working Families and Mike O'Halloran of the National Federation of Independent Business. And your calls on Midday after the news from NPR.
I extend my hand to you in cooperation and in devotion to our duty. And I ask each of you and all Marylanders to seek that middle ground where we can all stand together. Because together, we are stronger. Together, we can continue on this bold new path. And together, we can and we will change Maryland for the better.
Governor Larry Hogan delivering his second State of the State address in Annapolis yesterday. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. Very glad that you have tuned in. Governor Hogan's tone of bipartisanship yesterday was quite different than last year's State of the State address. The Republican governor outlined what he views as the successes of this past year. Repeal of the so-called rain tax, reduction or elimination of more than 100 fees across state government, creation of more than 55,000 jobs in the state's economy. And Governor Hogan described his goals for the 2016 session, eliminating some corporate taxes, moving forward on $2 billion worth of infrastructure projects, reforming the way Maryland draws its congressional districts. Before the speech, Democratic elected officials, state and local, critiqued Governor Hogan's proposed budget. Here's Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz.
The governor promises that he is going to provide record funding for education. And yet, how much money is in this budget beyond the minimum operating budget that's required by law? Zero. The governor says he promised that he was going to resolve, after taking all the money away, to resolve mass transit problems in the Baltimore region and leaving us stuck in traffic. He promised that he would have a grandiose solution that would resolve mass transit woes in Baltimore region. How much is in his budget that addresses mass transit needs for the Baltimore region? Zero. The governor came into Baltimore City and announces on behalf of the region that he's going to start solving all of the housing issues in Baltimore City, promising this record $700 million to tear down housing. How much new money is in this budget to do that? Zero. Governor, where's the beef?
Joining me now to discuss Governor Hogan's plans as he described them in his State of the State, and also the economic plans Democrats are putting forth, is WIPR State House reporter Rachel Bay. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you could take time to join us. We heard sort of a preemptive reaction from Democratic County Executive of Baltimore County, Kevin Kamenetz. What kind of reaction to Governor Hogan's State of the State address did he get in Annapolis?
So, you know, the response was pretty well split on party lines. From Republicans, there was a lot of praise that it was a good speech, a very good conciliatory olive branch type of speech, encouraging bipartisan cooperation. And then from Democrats, you heard complaints that it was, you know, there was a lot of really good rhetoric, but there wasn't a lot of substance there, not a lot of ideas.
Let's listen to part of what Governor Hogan said about education funding.
This year, we will break our historic record high investment in public education from last year. And thanks to your help, I have become the first governor in Maryland history to ever fully fund GCEI in his second year. Most importantly, per pupil spending is increased in every single jurisdiction across the state. These investments are important, but as we look to the year ahead, it's clear that more money alone will not close the performance gap we see impacting Maryland's children. We owe it to them to think more creatively and to find new solutions.
That first platform that Governor Hogan talked about, GCEI, stands for Geographic Cost of Education Index. It's a formula that adjusts for higher school costs in some areas of the state. And before I ask you, what kind of pushback Governor Hogan got for touting his record on education spending, describe to us the scene in the House chamber where both the House and Senate gathered to hear this speech. We heard applause there. Was that only Republicans who were applauding?
I honestly don't recall that exact moment in the speech, but there were several moments, and this may have been one of them, where you saw Republicans standing and applauding and Democrats not joining them. And that may have been one of those moments that was split along party lines.
Well, and this, as I mentioned, so the governor is claiming credit for fully funding education. What are the Democrats saying about that claim?
Well, so he is technically fully funding education and he is increasing funding for education over last year, but his increase is actually roughly the same as the increase that we see every year because it's required by law, and that's something that the Democrats are pretty quick to say that effectively when the governor is saying that he is increasing funding and that he's fully funding education, they're saying, well, you know, he's basically saying he's following the law.
And we heard County Executive Kamenetz a minute ago saying there's zero money, he says, in the budget beyond what the bare minimum that the governor would have had to put in there. What are the Democrats pushing for in terms of education funding? What would they have liked to have seen in the budget?
Yeah, so they talk about, in Baltimore in particular, there's a clamor for additional support to help offset the fact that Baltimore City schools are seeing a decline in enrollment. So when you see a decline in enrollment, because the schools are funded on a per pupil basis, they're seeing a decline in funding. They're losing more than $20 million in funding. And so a lot of people from Baltimore City would like to see some sort of supplementary funds there. And then there's also some of this kind of goes back to last year when there was actually a fight over whether the governor would fully fund, you referred to the GCEI, and that money was kind of left on the table. And so a lot of legislators are still kind of smarting from that.
That is WIPR's State House reporter Rachel Bay. She covers the state government and state legislature here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. You can be part of this conversation, too. What do you think of Governor Hogan's approach? What do you think of how Democrats who control the legislature are responding to him? You can call us or send us an email. Our email address is midday@wypr.org. Our local number is 410-662-8780. Again, 410-662-8780. And we have a toll-free number if you're a ways from Baltimore. That is 866-661-9309. We'd love for you to be part of this conversation. Let's listen to what Governor Hogan said, part of what he said about education funding. Oh, okay. Actually, I'm sorry. I've confused myself because what I really wanted to hear at this point, we already heard Governor Hogan on education funding, but County Executive Kamenetz and Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake were very harshly critical of what they say is a mismatch between Governor Hogan's rhetoric and what's in the budget on several points, including education. And they also talked about tackling some issues in the city. Here's what Governor Hogan had to say about tackling issues in the city.
Over the past few months, we launched school-to-career opportunities for Baltimore youth, improved educational options for college-bound students, invested an additional $135 million to improve the city's transit system, finally closed down the notorious Baltimore City Jail, began the process of stopping urban blight with a plan to demolish abandoned, decaying buildings throughout the city. And we have been fostering improved economic development strategies, more redevelopment opportunities, and a pro-jobs economic climate.
And as I said, the Democrats from whom we heard before the speech say the budget doesn't match that. Rachel Bay, did the governor indicate that Baltimore could expect to see more money coming its way?
So there, one of the points that he mentioned there was the plan to stop urban blight, to demolish vacant row homes in parts of Baltimore. And he's promised roughly $75 million in state funding to do that, but it's not been included in this budget. And the governor's administration has indicated that that money could be included in a supplemental budget later on. But again, it's not something that has so far been allocated.
The governor spoke a lot about cutting taxes and fees. What kind of picture did he paint about Maryland's tax climate?
He painted a pretty rosy picture about the tax climate. He talked a lot about the tax cuts he's already implemented. He talked about sending, I believe, $600 million back to taxpayers. And his proposals now include another $400-plus million in tax and fee reductions.
And yet he's also worried about the gap overall. He talks about the structural deficit not being completely gone, although he says he's made a big impact on it. So where is there going to be room for the kinds of tax cuts he's talking about?
So a lot of the tax cuts are actually things that have already been backed by the Democrats in the legislature, things like the earned income tax credit, which already exists. He's talking about accelerating that. And he's talking about increasing the deduction the exemptions that seniors are allowed to put on their to file on their taxes. Things that and these a lot of these tax cuts will be paid for kind of in a delayed fashion over a several year period. So the bulk of that won't hit the state's bottom line for a few years.
Of course, Governor Hogan ran on his experience in business. How does he plan to attract more business and jobs to Maryland?
He has he's proposed a number of ways to attract manufacturing, specifically to parts of the Eastern Shore, to Western Maryland and Baltimore. He said that for any new manufacturing business that opens up in specific areas of those regions of the state, they could qualify for tax exemptions basically for 10 years, and also employees of some of those manufacturing businesses who are making less than $67,000 would also qualify for exemptions from the income tax.
And that's in his, those are in the budget he's already proposed, or is that also something that we'd see later?
Again, these are proposals that would be kind of paid for out over, they are in the budget, but they're paid for over several years because of the way they're funded.
I mentioned the shot of rhetoric, sort of preemptive strike that Democratic elected officials gave before the governor actually delivered his State of the State speech yesterday. But even earlier in the week, Senate President Mike Miller and House Speaker Michael Bush stood with other Democratic representatives unveiling their legislative priorities. Can you tell us what they highlighted on Monday?
Sure. So they highlighted three main concepts. One was pay equity, gender-based pay equity. Another was helping Marylanders pay for college. And the third was helping Marylanders save for retirement. So of those, only one of those is actually something that's been introduced at this point. The pay equity measure is something that it looks very similar to some of the things that President Obama was talking about earlier this week, I believe it was. And it effectively protects workers who want to discuss their what they make from retaliation from their bosses, and also requires a greater degree of transparency from employers regarding what they're paying their employees. But then the other two items, the college affordability and the retirement security concepts, haven't yet been filed, so we haven't seen what those bills will look like.
Right, and we're going to be talking more about pay equity later in this hour. I do want to share with listeners part of what the Democratic chairman of the Budget and Tax Committee, Senator Ed Casemeyer of Baltimore County, how he characterized what it is that Democrats are trying to create in creating a matching fund to encourage families to start saving early for their children's college.
What we're proposing to do is to sort of provide what an employer does in a 401k, that is to make a match for people who are willing to participate. And we're offering a $250 match, which is great in terms of income. Those people who earn more money will have to put in more and get the $250. Those people who earn under $100,000 will only have to put in $25 to get a $250 match.
And as I understand it, Rachel, there's a second part to this proposal about college saving. Can you give us an idea what that is?
Sure. So the second, again, we haven't seen the text of it, so it's not totally clear what the specifics will look like. But what they've said is that they plan to help families and students who have more than $20,000 in student debt, help them make easier payments, effectively, when they're repaying those loans. And they said that they would be able to provide this to roughly 5,000 students in the state.
Lots more, I guess, that I should be asking you about, but we need to wrap this up. So let me ask you this. Today and tomorrow, what are you going to be covering at the State House?
So the big headline today and tomorrow is, so today they swore in he was Delegate Craig Zucker from Montgomery County. Now he's Senator Craig Zucker. And Zucker is expected to be the deciding vote on a vote to override the governor's veto of a bill last year. That bill would give felons the right to vote as soon as they're released from prison rather than at the end of their probation and parole period.
And the House has already voted on this override?
Yes, the House has already voted. In fact, Craig Zucker voted as a delegate in the House, and now he is expected to vote the same way in the Senate tomorrow.
So he gets two bites at this apple.
He does.
So that's a big story today and tomorrow?
Yes, that is the headline today, yes.
Well, I appreciate your bringing us up to date, Rachel. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Rachel Bay covers the State House for WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass. We need to take a short break. When we get back, we're going to be joined by Charlie Carter, Executive Director of Maryland Working Families, a nonprofit that's been pushing a set of bills called the Women's Economic Security Agenda. And we'll also hear from Mike O'Halloran, the Maryland Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. And we'd love to hear from you. 410-662-8780 is our local number for midday, 410-662-8780. Or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay right here. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Maryland is one of 22 states whose legislatures are considering equal pay legislation. Last week, a group of Democrats in the Maryland General Assembly held a press conference to announce a set of bills they call the Women's Economic Security Agenda. It includes bills that aim to support pay equity for women, paid sick leave, and fair scheduling for employees in the retail and hospitality industry. As in years past, businesses argue the proposed laws would be burdensome, while employees view them as protection. And here with me in the studio is Charlie Carter. Charlie is executive director of Maryland Working Families, a nonprofit, independent political organization that tries to create government representative of workers' values. They held a press conference with the legislators this week. Charlie Carter, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me back.
And joining us by phone is Mike O'Halloran. Mike O'Halloran is Maryland director of the National Federation of Independent Business, an advocacy group which aims to protect small business owners from unnecessary interference from the government. Mike O'Halloran, thanks for calling in.
Absolutely, Sheila. Thanks so much for having me. And Charlie, I know we haven't met in person, but it's good to meet you over the phone at least.
My goodness, as much as your two organizations end up debating many issues, I'm surprised that you haven't met in person. I'm glad we've got you together here in this conversation. Charlie, let me ask you, what are the major problems that these bills aim to fix?
The major problems are, Maryland, there are over 315,000 families that are headed by women in Maryland. Most of those are at the lower end of the economic spectrum. But over 80% of households in Maryland depend on a woman's income. And so when we look at all of these bills as a package, what we see is these practices destabilize families and their financial their ability to provide for their families and to lift themselves up to a higher standard of living. When you look at them individually, they're all really good, strong pieces of legislation, but together they work to form a foundation of financial stability for families in Maryland.
So give me an example. I know I ask you an umbrella question about this whole package, but take one of the bills in particular and tell me why you think it destabilizes families.
Certainly. Let's take pay equity, for example, or the equal pay for equal work. Maryland's been a leader on this issue, but still, women in Maryland are only paid 85 cents for every dollar that a man earns. Women, African-American women, the number is 77 cents in Maryland. And for Latino women, it's 64 cents. That means that an African-American woman is working a third of the next year just in order to make what her white male counterparts are making on average. That means rent, that's utilities, that's food on the table, that's saving for a child's education. They won't be able to open a 529 because they're too busy paying the bills.
529 is a college savings plan, yeah.
Yeah. They can't save for their kids because they're too busy paying for expenses now. And when women are worried about can they pay the bills today, it leaves their children unstable. It leaves their family's future unstable.
And you mentioned a minute ago Maryland has been a leader. I do feel like I've been hearing about this issue and legislation moving through the General Assembly for years. What is it that you think still needs to be done? What would this particular bill do?
Well, as the last guest talked about, the first thing it does is it offers protections for workers to be able to talk about how much they're being paid and the differences in their pay wages and to inquire from employers about those differences. If you're making $10,000 less than your male counterpart, you, under this bill, will be able to, without retaliation, go to your employer and say, why is he making $10,000 more? And the employer will have to tell you, explain why one person is making more than the other. They would have to justify it.
Mike O'Halloran, let me pull you in to give us a business perspective on this particular bill. Do you believe it? What's your reaction? Do you think it would cause problems where Charlie Carter says it would solve problems?
Well, yeah. Let's be clear. You know, NFIB has always and our members always support equal pay. And we agree with the principle that an equal day's work deserves an equal day's pay. There is no denying that. I mean, that's certainly something that Charlie and I agree on. However, if you look at the fine print of this bill, that's what gives small business owners in Maryland heartburn. You know, some of the terms they use, such as business necessity test, I mean, that's something that, you know, who is that left up to? Is that left up open to a judge to interpret in terms of what is the business necessity?
I was going to say, you have to tell us where this fits into the law. What is it that the proposed bill, what does the bill say needs to meet a business necessity test?
So, in other words, if you know, a small business owner may pay each of his employees, regardless of whether it's a man, a woman, African American, Hispanic, white, it does not matter. They may pay their employees different wages based on a myriad of options. And what this bill unfortunately does is it opens up a small employer to interference, not only from government, but it also opens them up to frivolous and unnecessary lawsuits. And I think that's what gives small business owners extra heartburn, especially in light of the fact that you have, not only in Maryland law, but also in federal law as well, so many things protecting gender discrimination. You have the Maryland Equal Pay Act. You have the Maryland Equal Rights Amendment provides additional protections at the federal level. We have the Equal Pay Act. We have Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. In addition, you also have the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, which is that was the first piece of legislation, if I'm not mistaken, that President Obama signed into law.
Right, that's federal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. You're just saying there's too many legal approaches to try to solve the same problem, and that can result in an unfair agglomeration of burdens on business?
Well, I'm not saying that there are too many legal options, you know, currently on the books. What I'm saying is that this bill in front of us that Charlie's talking about is unnecessary, given all the federal and state statutes that already exist.
Let me give Charlie Carter from Maryland Working Families a chance to respond to that point in particular.
Certainly. Well, you know, when we look at this particular piece of the law, it is to erase factors that have been used historically to pay male and female employees differently. And I would like to say there are a myriad of laws on the books, and yet still there appears to be a wage gap that hasn't closed in the last 15 to 20 years. It hasn't narrowed at all. So we need to go back and revisit this issue. But the example I want to give you is an employer that says, you know, to a male and a female work employees doing the same job, but he says, well, he makes $5,000 more because he speaks French. What that clause says is that if French isn't relevant to the job, you cannot pay him more just because he speaks French. So it says that if you're going to use as a defense in paying a disparate wage, that whatever that is that you're using, whatever the justification you use, has to be applicable to the job. If it's just something that's, you know, you can't reward someone for something that's not, they're not going to use on the job.
Well, and Sheila, that's where small business owners are very hesitant about this bill. Is now the example that Charlie used, I mean, that's kind of, I don't particularly find that relevant to the conversation about this bill. You know, an employee may be paying an employer may be paying a male employee, you know, X amount of dollars more because they, in their eyes, they have skills and abilities that quite frankly, earn them that right to earn more. So now another employee who feels discriminated against, they can go ahead and file a suit. Where, by the way, there's, frankly, in the bill that I'm reading, there's no due process for employers. So I guess that's where the difference lies between small business owners see as an affront to their ability to pay their employees what they feel that they, you know, rightfully are due, and, you know, what proponents of the bill feel that, well, you know, everybody should make the same, and, you know, it's up to the courts to decide whether or not a business necessity, whether that's, you know, being able to work a tool better than somebody else, let them decide. And that's That's not what we're in favor of.
That's Michael Halloran, Maryland Director of the National Federation of Independent Business here on Midday on WYPR. Here with me in the studio is Charlie Carter, Executive Director of Maryland Working Families. We're talking about a package of bills aimed at equity in the workplace, particularly for women. I'm sorry, Charlie, I interrupted you. You were about to say.
I was just going to say Michael left out a really important piece. He's assuming that employees can just take their employers to court. No, what they can do is file a complaint with the Department of Labor and Licensing Reform and ask them to do an investigation. And pending the outcome of that investigation, then they can take their employer to court, as is the right of employers to do that under many codes here in Maryland. I think it's really, you know, I don't want to get hung up on the technical aspects of the bill.
But Mike has a point he wants to make right now.
Oh no, I mean Charlie, respectfully, I mean, you know, you may want to gloss over the fine print, but that's the fine print is exactly what gives small business owners such heartburn with this bill. I mean, again, if you're talking in platitudes, it sounds, you know, pie in the sky and it sounds great, but reading through this bill, I mean, it can keep a small business owner up at night sweating.
But is there a version then? Are you that implies to me, Michael Halloran, that you're saying, let us, if we work together on the details, we could come up with a version of this that business would not oppose.
The version that small business does not oppose is already what's on the books. It's already what they're going by.
And Charlie, to that you say,
and yet women in Maryland are still only making 85 cents on the dollar for a man. During this same bill was introduced last year, and even during the hearing, legislators started themselves on the committee started to testify about their experiences, finding out after they were leaving a job, much like Lilly Ledbetter, that they were paid thousands of dollars less than their counterparts. So I think, you know, this is a real problem. It hurts most women in this state, whether you're hourly, whether you're a professional woman. The standards that apply in things like the difference between being a janitor, which is a job title that's normally assigned to men, versus a housekeeper, a job title normally assigned to women. There's usually a $5,000 to $7,000 difference in pay. This bill eliminates that. Opportunities. Michael talked about, well, the business owner wants to be able to decide. We agree with that. The vast majority of small business owners treat their employees like family. It is fair, but there is a significant subset of businesses who don't treat their employees that way, where they are paying men more per hour than women, that they are paying professionals, you know, more annually than women, and it amounts to huge numbers. The National Partnership for Women and Families says here in the state of Maryland that the loss to women totals more than $8.5 million a year. The pay gap for women in Maryland, $8.5 million that could be going into our economy, that could be stabilizing our families.
But if you're saying this is a problem really in a few businesses, not most small businesses. This sort of too big an approach then?
I think you're correct there. And Charlie, to, you know, for the small business owners that are following the law and are paying
their
employees,
they are not impacted by this bill at all.
You know, for the small employers that are not following law, why aren't those employees who feel discriminated, they have plenty of tools already in the toolbox to go after that, whether it's federal or state law.
Actually, they don't have the tools to go after it, and that's what this law does. This law says that we're going to give you state protections. We're going to give you an avenue at the state level that if you feel like you've been, your employer's been biased and has been paying you unfair wages, that you have a state pathway for getting justice and for getting restitution, and that's all this bill does. If small businesses are already paying their employees fair wages, they have nothing to worry about. this bill does not impact them at all.
I'm sure Mike O'Halloran has an answer to that. Unfortunately, we need to take a quick break right now. Mike O'Halloran from the National Federation of Independent Business is going to be with us. Charlie Carter from Maryland Working Families is going to stay with us. You can join us, too, if you think that – and we've only actually been talking about the Pay Equity Act. We want to talk about – when we come back from this short break, we want to talk about paid sick leave. We want to talk about scheduling of workers in hotels and restaurants. I'd love to hear your thoughts about all of this. Our local number is 410-662-8780. Our email address is midday@wypr.org. Be part of the conversation and stay with us over this quick break. I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the Women's Economic Security Agenda, a group of four bills aiming to promote financial stability for women in Maryland. Charlie Carter, Executive Director of Maryland Working Families, a nonprofit, is with us. Mike O'Halloran, Maryland Director of the National Federation of Independent Business, is with us on the phone. And we're eager for you to be part of the conversation. Also, you can call us at 410-662-8780. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. As I mentioned, we've been talking just about the Pay Equity Act so far. There are other elements of this bill. Charlie Carter, tell us briefly about the scheduling bill, what it would do and why you think it's important, and then I'll get Mike's reaction to that.
Certainly. I think the Fair Scheduling Bill requires employers to give advance notice to employees of their upcoming schedules instead of having to call in every day to find out whether or not they should show up for work. It allows families, particularly women, to plan for childcare, to plan to go to school, to plan for additional jobs. The Council on Child Abuse and Neglect here in Maryland says that the number one reason that a child abuse and neglect investigation is launched in a family is a parent's schedule. More and more, I think you and I can remember, probably back to our first jobs, probably back to our parents' jobs, that they knew or that we knew when we were supposed to show up at work. My first job was in retail, and I can remember 2 weeks in advance, I got my schedule. I could trade off shifts with my coworkers if I needed to have a day off. But I could plan my life. And for adults who were working, they could plan
for
childcare.
So exactly what would this bill do? How would it be more planable?
Well, it says that an employer has to tell you what your schedule is in advance.
How much in advance?
The bill says 3 weeks in advance. And we've been talking with businesses about, you know, whether 3 weeks works for every industry. But the goal is to give families the greatest amount of notice so that they can plan their lives.
Mike O'Halloran, what does the National Federation of Independent Business think about this?
I mean, quite frankly, 3 weeks in advance. And I'll speak anecdotally real quickly. I grew up in the restaurant industry, always worked in the restaurant industry. And if you look at this bill 3 weeks in advance, now granted, I was fortunate enough to work for some restaurants that, you know, they had the schedule, you know, usually a week in advance. But what happens under this bill is, you know, if I get, you know, if I have a family member pass away and I need to give up my shift, well, under this bill, I could potentially still get paid for predictive scheduling pay. Whereas if you go into any restaurant, you'll go into the back of the house near the manager's office, and you'll see a billboard up there. And you'll see everybody with a little note up there saying, hey, you know, Stacy wants to pick up a Friday p.m. shift, or Karen wants to give away her Thursday a.m. shift. I mean, these are, you know, issues that small business owners and their employees are solving on their own. They don't need government mandates that put further onus, further payment liabilities on a small-time employer who's just trying to let their employees sort out their own schedules amongst themselves.
Let me. I know we could debate this vigorously for the rest of the hour, but I do want to pull in some of our callers who are responding really to some of the things that you each were saying on the pay equity question. Angela is calling us from Mount Vernon. Angela, welcome to Midday.
Yes, hi. I'm calling in response to one of the issues that was brought up by Michael, indicating that if an employee has a complaint or wants to address an issue, you can file a complaint against your employer and go through the legal protocol that's already established. Well, Maryland is the at-will state. And a lot of times when employers find out that they're being investigated or there's a charge against them, you know, they can just fire you. And it will not be seen as, it can just be done.
In other words, it's not retaliation.
It can just be done.
An at-will state, meaning the employee works at will as long as the employer wills that employee work.
As it's indicated, either the employer or the employee can terminate the professional relationship at any time, but it is usually the employee who is terminated.
Angela, I appreciate the call. I'm going to ask our guest to address it, but let me also pull Tom in here, who's calling us from Baltimore. Tom, your point?
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'd like to say one of your commentators or guests said that if there's a problem with the equal pay, if it goes through, same with overtime and minimum wage, you must go through the Maryland Department of Labor Licensing and Regulation. I've had that experience with them, and I've had a case with proper documentation, and they said, you definitely have a case, and they allowed me to fill out a form for the complaint. But they also explained to me that we'd go no further than the office because the state legislature does not provide enough money in the budget for that department for investigations. So even if you pass the law for equal pay, unless you put money in the Maryland Department of Labor Licensing and Regulation to investigate and enforce, then it will go nowhere.
Interesting point. I wasn't aware of that, and I'd like to get our guest to comment on that, too. So we've got two issues sort of related to the law. Michael Halloran from NFIB, which of these would you like to respond to, or both?
Sure. Well, I mean, in terms of the budgeting process, small business owners have nothing to do with how much money is dedicated to dollar. But I will say, and frankly, this can go to both callers. I mean, if you look at what is in current law right now under the Labor and Employment Article, Section 3-307, if an employer violates, anything, any sort of discrimination, being the Maryland Equal Pay Act, if they violate that, in current law, an employee has the opportunity to bring a lawsuit against that employer. That's already on the books. Now, if employees are not taking advantage of this or they don't know about it, that's something totally different.
But one of Tom's points was that it costs money to hire a lawyer. I mean, saying you can bring suit doesn't necessarily solve the problem.
Sure, and there are outfits out there, whether it's Legal Aid or another outfit that cater to these sorts of issues, and they do it pro bono.
Let me find out what Charlie Carter thinks about these callers.
I really want to thank the callers for calling in because they highlight two really important issues. The first caller, she's absolutely right that under current law, there would be no protection for her if she were to raise this issue to her employer. That is what the equal pay, this fair pay equity law does. It actually says that this is something that you are protected against. You can't, the employer
cannot. So it carves out an exception to the at-will nature of employment.
Exactly. And it says that if you are retaliated against, you can go through the state in order to get justice, as opposed to going through the National Labor Relations Board in Washington, D.C., and having it take 3 years before you can get any kind of justice. For the second caller, you're absolutely right that DLLR is underfunded with investigations. And what we need to do is push on Governor Hogan to make sure that he puts funding in that budget so that they can investigate. not just pay disparity, not just violation of wages, not just wage theft, which is increasing in our state, but real other concerns like health and safety violations that are increasingly occurring on the job site. So they absolutely need much more funding in order to investigate. What this bill also does is it allows the Attorney General to investigate if Dollar does not have the will or the means to investigate a violation of pay disparity, that the Attorney General can actually come in and do the investigation if they have the capacity to do so.
And Charlie, I'm glad you brought that up. What the bill actually does, if you break it down to brass taxes, is it allows an employee to have a taxpayer-funded lawyer in the presence of the Attorney General go ahead and sue their employer.
It allows the Attorney General to enforce the law. So it's not a taxpayer-funded lawyer. It is allowing the Attorney General to enforce the law as he is charged to do under the Charter of Maryland.
No, I understand that. I'm not disagreeing. But what your bill actually does is it allows an employee to essentially contract directly with the Attorney General. The Attorney General already has the power, if there are bad actors out there, to go ahead and enforce the law. We're not disagreeing there.
So I'm sorry, I'm not sure I'm following the distinction that you are making, Mike. You're saying that this makes it too easy for the Attorney General to get involved? Mike?
Correct. I'm sorry. Correct.
So this for you is another heartburn issue.
Correct.
Let's talk to Pat in Baltimore. Pat, welcome to Midday.
Hi. Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good day.
Your comment?
Can you hear me?
I hear you now, yes. Your comment?
Okay, great. So my comment is, what if I have hired somebody at a certain salary, and it's a salary that I can afford, and then that person does some investigations, and out in the world they decide that the type of company that I have, their average salary is $10,000 or $20,000 more, but I can't afford that. Can they force me under this law to increase that person's salary?
In other words, is it a matter just of comparing, being able to compare salaries within one employer's organization, or you're asking whether or not an employee could try to make the case that other businesses pay differently for this work?
Right. Exactly.
Okay, let me ask Charlie. We're really tight on time. Let me ask Charlie Carter to address that.
The easy answer is no. What this bill does is it says that the same work done for the same employer, that they should be paid the same wages.
The same work done for the same employer
should be same wages if they are equally qualified and doing the same work.
Mike O'Halloran, do you have a comment?
Oh, absolutely. So if I'm an employer and let's say I'm based in Annapolis and I have some satellite offices, let's say one is in Silver Spring right outside Washington, D.C., and one is in Salisbury. All right, they still work for the same company, and I can afford to pay someone out in Salisbury less than I can afford to pay somebody in Silver Spring, and that could be for a variety of reasons, but the one that comes to mind is, quite frankly, the cost of living. I mean, it's still, if you balance it out, they're still making the same thing. However, my employee in Salisbury can go ahead and bring a lawsuit against me under the guise of this bill, and that's the issue. It ceases to realize the economic realities for business owners out there. It just doesn't do a good job of bringing in all the myriad of reasons of why an employer pays an employee a certain amount, and it has nothing to do with gender. And if it did, again, going back to one of my first points, there are already protections in both federal
actually,
and state
law. Actually, that's not true.
I'm going to give you 15 seconds to make that because we're almost out of
time. Actually, it's not true. They could only bring suit if the pay disparity was based on gender.
I am very grateful to you both. We didn't even get a chance to talk about paid sick leave, so we'll have to ask you both back. You've given us a lot to think about. I want to thank Charlie Carter, Executive Director of Maryland Working Families, and Michael Halloran, Maryland Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. I want to thank our listeners for taking part. I want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch for our guests today. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features a variety of sandwiches and salads, all listed on their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. Join us for midday tomorrow when we'll have our Friday News Roundup. I'm Sheila Cast. I hope you have a great day. Here and Now is next.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.